ask. Yeah.
One quick. I have a really quick question. It's just I gotta ask it.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Mike. Arcs. Arcs on Earth. Arcs in Heaven.
Yeah.
I noticed that, for example, Ian would talk about. He'd say, "Wear the two armors of God, the strength of God, and the power of His might." And then he would go on and say that an arc might form between them, opening the window of heaven as releasing your glory as a receipt, a recognized shadow on earth as you are in heaven, as you stand in this. What I want to understand, so obviously there's two points for an arc. It reaches up to heaven, release, opens heaven, releases glory. I guess that was the same with the Ark of the Covenant. There were two points.
Yeah.
And you can have arcs when you're, I imagine, when you're doing communion, because actually, Jesus, if I'm right, Jesus would be in you. Jesus in the Father, that would form an arc.
Yeah.
In you?
Yeah.
What to form? So are we looking to form arcs? And what would be a general thing when I'm thinking about that for forming an arc? Because I imagine there's an arc going up to heaven and an arc in heaven coming back down to us. Or am I wrong there?
No, you're not wrong. I think it's just a way of thinking about agreement, really. So where two agree, you form a connection that releases blessing to come out of the connection. So even where there's two agree on earth, you could say they're forming an ark for God's manifest promise to come. So where he says, you know, where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. That's an ark. So two would form an ark. Three can form government, which then affirms an outworking of what God manifests. I think a lot of these things are really mindsets or ways of looking at things that enable us to see God's promises manifested. And when you think of lots of things in the Word where you see two things coming together, those two things open up an opportunity for God to come into the midst of it. And when we reach up, I know Ian talks about when we raise our hands up, we're looking to form an ark, because God comes inhabits our praises. So there's a sense where you are connecting heaven to earth, because we're lifting up our arms to heaven in praise. Again, the Ark of the Covenant, where the two wings of the cherubim formed, and then the high priest would come and chant the name of God and sing the name of God, and therefore the presence of God would form between the ark, the two presence. So it's really looking to form a connection close enough together for the power or the manifestation of God to come in the midst of that. So if you had two people who weren't in agreement that came together, they wouldn't be forming an arc. You know, where an electricity spark goes from one pole to another, that forms an arc that connects up the power of the two poles. So really, there's lots of different ways of looking at it. Communion would be one, where you are coming in agreement with the power that's available in communion, and then that is released to jump to you, if you like, as a spark jumps from one to another when you get close enough to it. So that's another way of looking at it, that it once you draw close enough, near enough to God, then he draws near to you, and therefore you get a manifestation of his presence. So if God is there and you're not close enough, there isn't a proximity for the ark to spark, if you like, so that the presence of God could come close enough, which is why we need to draw near to God, and he then draws nearest to us. He hasn't moved. when we draw near to him, it's like that spark or manifestation of who he is connects to us, which forms the connection for a flow of power, revelation, truth, anything that can flow from him to us when we come close enough. You know, and so in a sense, when we're looking to connect up to heaven, we are looking to form that shadow here on earth, which heaven recognizes and then comes and manifests around. In heaven, you've got the same thing. When we stand in the Holy of Holies in the tabernacle and replace the cherubim who fell, obviously Lucifer, then we form an ark for God's manifest presence when we come into the Holy of Holies and stand next to the mercy seat to look into the presence of God. So God manifests his presence when we stand there symbolically, in a sense, but that's the first thing he ever showed me was, you know, there's only one cherubim because Satan fell, and we get to replace him. And I know Ian jokes that, you know, that's true replacement theology, in that we get to replace Satan in the presence of God to look into what he did, and then he was to reflect out into creation the light of the revelation that he saw out from his nine stones, to reflect out those nine attributes of God or truths, revelation out from him. And we get to do the same, essentially. When we come around the presence of God, we look into his will and look into his purpose, and then we're supposed to then manifest that out through our lives. So I think there's lots of different ways of looking at it. And when you look at numerology, you look and you begin to tune into these things, you see lots of twos then in the Bible. You see two things mentioned, and often you see three things mentioned, which really is talking about government, where two things are looking to form a connection that releases the presence of God. So anything where you draw near to a promise, you form an arc between yourself and that promise to see the promise manifested, because you come in agreement and you come in belief for that promise, then you're forming an arc between it, which releases power for manifestation. If we're a long way away from the promise, then there's no way that the promise can connect to us. So really, we have to draw near so that we form the arc to anything that we're looking to connect with, whether it's people, as you know, other people. You know, when we're in agreement with them, then things can manifest in the midst. So I think that's how I would perceive these things. And once you do tune into an understanding of it, then you can look to form connections in many different ways. You know, any place you go to and you draw near to, then you can look to connect up with the revelation and the experience of that place, because you've drawn near to the place and you formed an art with it. You know, it's very much like that. But because we've not seen it that way, we've never seen the fact that when we draw near, we make the connection that actually produces the manifestation. And it's like everything has potential energy that's looking for a release. So all God's promises, all the revelation of who he is and what he's done and what he's to do, all those things are looking for a connection, for manifestation. And they're really looking for us to connect. You know, so that helps.
One quick follow-up question. I think it's just a quick yes or no on what you could answer. Yeah. You mentioned when we're around the ark and the Holy of Holies, in a way where I never realized that before, we're actually replacing possibly Satan there, and we're actually acting as the other cherubim.
Yeah.
So the revelation is coming up to us.
Yeah, because God manifests in the midst. Because there's no manifestation when there's not two. And so, in a sense, because Satan fell, it left the Holy of Holies bereft, if you like, of that, of his presence, because he was there to make that connection. The earthly tabernacle and the mercy seat reflected what was the perfection of heaven. But when Jesus died and he took his blood back into heaven, it said he cleansed the tabernacle from that which Satan had messed up. And he then makes a veil, a way that we can come through him to come into the Holy of Holies and to take up our place there as sons of God, to be able to connect up and manifest with his presence and person and truth and the revelation of who he is. So yeah, that's how I've certainly experienced it, and I think I know Ian's taught that as well. So yeah. Okay. Has anyone else got something?
Angela, if you don't have anything, can I go ahead? Okay. Two things, actually. The first one, it's about being a friend of God. And it seems to be all weekend. We had a conference this weekend, and it seems to be a theme, and the whole thing is about walking with God. And we practice walking with him, engaging around the ark and different places. But what this person was talking about, she never talked anything about ark or living sacrifice and all those things that we talk about. She was talking about things like getting up and saying hello. Let us go to work, let us go watch a movie, things like that. And I was wondering, apart from engaging around the ark and altar of incense and so forth and so on, do you practice things like that? Telling the Lord, so Jesus, do you want to watch a movie? What movie do you want to look at? Things like that. Sure. I mean, it's really cool. Yeah, tell me.
Okay. Well, personally, I believe what she's talking about is a developing intimacy in our daily relationship with God as a habitation of God's presence, which is the pathway of relationship. So establishing that first love connection, establishing the daily intimacy where we fellowship with him, talk to him in intimacy, and become one. And I sort of hesitate to sort of say that the sort of asking Jesus to go to a movie and that sort of stuff is, well, let me think how to put it. once you join to the Lord and you become one spirit with him, then your spirit directs and moves your soul to flow in the relationship that you have out of his heart. Your conscience guides and directs you. But the more mature you come in it, the less you have to ask things like that. you just, the desires of your heart draw you towards it. You find that the desires of your heart are guided by your destiny and his desires for you on a daily basis and in friendship and in relationship, and therefore you don't really have to sort of ask those things, because you're going to do those things naturally because you're one with him. So, you know, whoever's joined to the Lord becomes one spirit with him. And so, you know, I go quite often, you know, there are seasons where I will spend time in intimacy when I find that I'm becoming busy and sometimes distracted. Then I'll go and spend some time with him on my garden, and we will just sort of talk, and I will share just how I'm feeling with him, and he will just talk to me. Often I will go to his garden in Eden and just be and not do anything, because I find a lot of those things is about what we're going to do rather than who I am and what I'm being, and the focus is on, well, what are we going to do rather than who we are. And I think what we do flows out of who we are, and when we're close in intimacy and we're in that relationship where we're flowing with him, where there's a flow of two-way communication through the prayer gate and things like that, then you just know, you know. And I think the closer you get to someone, the more you instinctively know what they feel, what they think, what they say, and you're aware of it. I think when you've been in marriage a long time, you know what the other person's thinking very often, because you're just so in tune with them, because you spent many years building a relationship of understanding, and you can tell body language and lots of things like that. So I think developing friendship with God ultimately, in terms of maturity of friendship, it really just, we are so connected with God that we flow and do the things that he would do. It's almost like my spirit and his spirit would want to do the same things, therefore they flow together. And I don't really have to ask things like, do you want to watch this movie? And a lot of things, it's just like, he's really happy with what I like to do, and I'm really happy with what he likes to do, because we're in a relationship, you know. So, you know, if I am going to watch something that he wouldn't like, then I would expect my conscience to guard me against watching that. But most of the time, he really isn't bothered. In my leisure time, and in the time where I'm relaxing, he's just as much part of that as in a time when I'm seeking him or going round the ark or going into a realm of heaven. There's no real difference in relationship or connection with it. So intimacy is us drawing near to him, but it's connecting up in the realm of the spirit that's on the inside of us and in the realm of the soul that's on the inside of us, so that we can hear him, see him, flow with him in every other way. And if it helps to build that consciousness, like some people would call it centering, or the sort of brother Lawrence practicing the presence of God, it's consciously trying to make sure that you're aware of God's presence with you, and being in that level of intimacy with him. Once you've practiced that and practiced it and practiced it, you actually just be it. You just, that's who you are, that's how you live. You don't need to practice it anymore because you live it. You know, and a lot of exercises and ways of thinking to help us think about it like that are just that sort of scaffolding that you put up to build your house, and then when the house is built, you live in it, and you don't need the scaffolding anymore. And they're all helpful little things. You know, that when I first started to look to practice the presence of God, I would set my watch to beep every hour, and when it beeped every hour, then I would just consciously think about and meditate about God's presence, reminding myself that he's with me and in me and around me and everything else, you know. And after I did that for a while, then I became sensitive, more sensitive to his presence. But if he wants me to know anything, he's got my number. You know, he can talk to me anytime, and he can direct me and lead me and give me insight into anything at any time, because my spirit and his spirit are connected and joined, and they flow as one. You know, so when I open my first love gate every day and invite his presence, and I surrender the throne of my spirit, of my the seat of government in my life to him, then I sit next to him. And so we are together in ruling in my life. So, yeah, I mean, I don't see any problem with any of those things. I think they're just things that help us get to the point where it's just how we live, if that's sort of...
Yeah, I really like what you said there. It's just like consciously making his presence a reality, and just practicing that until it really becomes a reality to the person themselves. So I think that's like Brother Lawrence, just practicing his presence in that way, so that we are become more aware of that, of his presence, that he's always with us, in us, and so forth. So. Yeah. Moving along from there, we have been experiencing the heavenly realms and just going up and stuff like that. One of the things we experienced is that we were in this place. It seems to have, it seems mountainous, but amazing. Of course, beautiful. It seems to have... water, but we came up through the water, and it seems to be there was, like, if you could see to different levels, and it seems like those artwork where you have like earth, like an amazing beautiful place of earth, and then you have like the stars and Milky Way and rivers and everything just melting sort of together in this amazing kind of earth, heavens looking thing. So we were in this sort of place, all of us, and all of us saw it and trying to really navigate. So we feel like we're kind of there and don't know what to do. And so as we're there, I started to see people on different vehicles, like mode of transportations. And they were saying hi and waving. I think you guys saw it. Angela, you guys saw that too. And they were waving. And then this one guy came off of a vehicle, and he was huge, like very muscular, big. And Jesus was there, and he came and he said something to Jesus. They talked a bit. Then he turned and looked at us, and he kind of saluted and went away. We didn't know who he was. And so then Angela had saw this diamond, this blue diamond, earlier when she was spending some time with Father. And then Deb got the blue diamond when we came together. And so she said, "Oh my goodness, I forgot the blue diamond. Where did I leave it?" And she said, "Okay, I'll call it." So she got it. And when we turn and look at the diamond, I saw it start to open up. It became like a mode of transportation, because we saw all this light reflecting and coming out of it and going upward. And we felt drawn to it as though we should step into it. And as we stepped into this diamond, it was brilliant, like light, just light shining out there. And as we stepped into it, it had four places. And as we stepped to the diamond, we saw ourselves as these light beings, just becoming one almost with the diamond, and then it closed over us. And as we were there, it was sort of, it's wrongly like that. It had a point, and it was going like this. So we felt that, like, it seems as though we weren't sure where to go. And we felt like, okay, because all of us, our desires are like where to go, what to do. That's what it was like that. And then as soon as we came together and said, this is where we want to go, it took off. We went to a number of places. But what I want to ask you about is that diamond and that place of seeing other people. And that diamond being a mode of transportation, like a light mode of transportation.
Okay. A lot of the experiences and encounters are designed to give you revelation of something. They're not necessarily a real thing. You know, they're real, but they're designed to engage you with revelation. So, you know, is there really a diamond which is a form of transportation? The revelation of it is that you're engaging with the multifaceted wisdom of God, the light which represents the encoding of the revelation of who God is and his will and his purpose and destiny and all those things. But when you look into it, it begins to open up something for you. And often symbolically, transport and moving and vehicles is about ministry. So the four of you are coming together in ministry, which is God's will and purpose for you. And that will take you to where you need to be and where you need to go. And so once you step into the revelation, and you then become it, as you see in the symbolic nature of it, it closed around you, both to protect you, but the symbolism is you were in it and in the center of it, then that revelation then can take you where you need to go. And so you are stepping into that which has been prepared for you to enable you to engage with what God's purpose and will is for you. And, you know, often blue is symbolic of wisdom. I know it's not might is the blue in the seven spirits of God, but wisdom herself is blue. And I find the whole of that realm of the heights is blue in color, and the blue pillar and all sorts of blue things there. Your engagement with it then enabled you to go to places because you've stepped into what is your destiny, if you like. And, you know, God gave me a blue diamond and he called it the stone of destiny. He says, I want you to look into this. And when I began to look into it, it's like I went into it. So it's a similar, and it took me to places. You know, the first things I saw mountains in there. The first times I saw a mountain was in that stone of destiny. And I stepped, as I began to look into it and I looked deeply into it, it drew me in. So it drew me into the experience and the encounter, because it's a revelation of that destiny that God has. You've just engaged it in that you saw it as a diamond, you began to look into it, and it opened up for you to step into it, and then you were able to go to where you needed the encounter to engage in. Similar, in terms of people that are on vehicles in things like that, they're usually symbolic, again, of those angelic beings that are associated with your destiny and ministry, hence the salute. So they were recognizing your authority. He was recognizing your authority in where you were. And often, you know, modes of transportation, it's not like angels are riding around on motorbikes or push bikes or any of. But the symbolism is that they're on a mission. They're moving, you know, and they're moving in relation to your ministry. which is why they're on vehicles, because vehicles represent ministry often, because it's a movement from one place to another and a way of engaging different things. And so the symbolism of it just helps us to see. There's lots of things in the realms of heaven which God can, he can manifest anything in any form or any shape to help us engage it. You know, I think one of the other, I can't remember who it was, one of the other ladies in your group, in the Burning Ones group, you know, shared that she saw a baseball pitch and a baseball match going on and different things like that. And, you know, I mean, I personally have never seen a baseball match go on, but I don't engage that way. I didn't need to engage that way, but it helped her to see something that God revealed the meaning of it to her. So, you know, the symbolic nature of things is to help us just engage in it. And then the key in all this is actually where you went and what you did when you went there, having stepped into something which enabled you to go. You know, and, you know, for me now, I don't use that stone of destiny like I used to, because I can now think where I need to go, you know, and so I don't use it in the same way, but to start with, it helped me, because it was like, where do I go? What do I need to do? I'll look into the stone, and then what I saw as a picture in the stone drew me into the place where I could go there. But I haven't used that for a while, because I tend to go around the presence of the ark now and open my heart up for the desires of my heart to take me where I need to go. So they're all sort of stepping stones in developing the abilities to be able to move into the realms of heaven and to go where we need to go to administer the kingdom. Because that's ultimately why we're going into that realm, is to exercise our responsibility as lords, kings, sons, to administer the kingdom. And that's ultimately what we are responsible to do, is to administer God's kingdom through our lives in the role that we've been given, so that we can manifest heaven on earth in various ways. But we get lots of encounters that help us to understand various aspects of that, which then we can begin to put together to enable us to do things so that we have more revelatory understanding within our spirit, and we can just do things. But in learning, God has to engage us in some way that helps us connect. And the fact that you're all beginning to see similar things and engage in similar ways is a illustration of your joint authority to operate in kingdom manifestation in that way, at that level. I don't know, does that help, or is there anything else you want to discuss around it?
I have a comment.
Yeah.
Like, you have such a way of bringing things to life, really. we had this experience, and we hadn't thought about it in that light. That's my comment. So in that experience, we went to several different places, and you made a comment, you know, it's about what we were doing, and we went to three distinct places, and the last Elizabeth described sort of the middle place that we went to. The last place we went to was a city, because Bill saw in the distance, when we were in this place, saw in the distance a city. So we decided to go there, and that was a very different place. And we saw, it's hard to know what what it represents when you see it, but we saw like buildings. When we got out of the diamond, it opened up, as Elizabeth said, and we stepped out and we saw stairs going down. And then we saw a distinct building. I guess we all saw it from a different perspective. It had arches and a long hallway, and there were steps going up, and I saw a person sort of at the entrance just kind of beckoning us to come in, and we saw people sitting on the window ledge. Like, it's an old stone building with arches and a long corridor, and then the major part of the building was to the facing it was to the right. And so we engaged there a little bit. There was a book, and we went in and engaged a little bit, and then we came away, but there was not a lot of clarity. Perhaps somebody else can expound on what we did there. But we were just engaging with the book. We saw different symbols. Somebody saw a fish, somebody saw an eye, we saw the Hebrew letters and things like that. So maybe somebody else can comment from there, and then you can probably make a comment then.
Well, we went into that building, into this room place, and we saw this huge book. And in the book, we saw these different letters. We saw the N, I think it was looking like a Hebrew letter like that. I can't remember what it was. It's just like that. And then let me see the camera. So, and then it come like that. Right? And we saw the I, and I think that is the resh, R-E-S-H, or something like that, which means like to see and so on. And I can't remember if we saw something looking like a fish. No, yeah, I think Angela saw that. We saw about four or five different letters, so we tried to put it together to see what it meant. But in that whole place, we felt like it had to do with meditation of the word and spending time in the word, and the word as a place, as a portal, really, where we could really enter in to see the whole thing of what God is doing and so forth. So that's really what we came away with. And incidentally, yesterday again, when we engaged around the ark, we saw this huge book again on the ark, and the pages were turning, and then the rest was blank, and on the right there was the word Ezekiel written there, and then two other persons saw pages and so forth, and then we felt like that was a place to step into the word, and then other things happened from there and so forth.
Okay. Okay. Well, the significant thing is that you were taken there, and you were given an experience which has opened up something for you to pursue. And the word or the book often means a season that you need to engage in. And in terms of understanding that season, the symbols, if you're all seeing similar symbols, those symbols will have a meaning. If they don't have a meaning to you right now, then you go and you then meditate around it to find the meaning of it. When I see something I don't understand, I know it's because God is wanting me to go deeper into it, because he wants to know whether I'm willing to pursue it. And so when I begin to pursue it, I would then take that either encounter or experience or something I'd seen, and then go and sit with God and talk to him about it. And I usually do that in my own garden, because that's the place where I need to see it operating in me, not just in a vision of heaven. Because the kingdom is within me, and I need to engage in the revelation so that I carry it within me. And I find that some of the things that happen to me in heaven, I need to have formed in me. Therefore, I spend the time with God in me, in the garden of my own heart, and I plant those testimonies as seeds in the garden and water them and command them to grow, and then I can begin to eat the fruit of those testimonies, which I then get greater revelation about. Because I've planted them within me and they become my testimony for further engagement. So they do become a portal or an entrance into the revelation of what that was about. But I carry it within me then, and so I can nurture it or I can draw from it from within my heart. And again, that often affects the desires of my heart because I've planted something that I experienced, and I'm now being drawn towards it, and I then pursue it. And often, he's not hiding things from us. He's basically looking for us to engage them so that they become part of us. And they become part of us when we have the memory of them ingrained within our heart. And then, you know, the scripture, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. Then we begin to think according to those things that we have revelation of in the encounters. And so, you know, often when you see fish in a symbol, and the Hebrew symbol of fish, it's about multiplication. The eye is often about, as you say, what we look at. It multiplies. So what we look into and what we begin to meditate on and what we begin to fix our eyes on multiplies in us and becomes a source of life in us to flow. But we have to fix our eyes on it, and we have to multiply it by, for me, I plant it in the garden of my own heart. And so now and again, you know, when I have a series of encounters or different things, I will just spend some time and go and plant them all. In fact, I did it this morning. You know, I've had some recent encounters that I know I need to engage more deeply in. So I will just go and I will take that encounter, plant it as a seed, water it from the river of life, speak life to it, and then see it grow. And then that then becomes the desire that my heart will draw me towards. And that's generally how it works for me. So if you're saying that the book had something Ezekiel written on it, that may well be something that God wants you to look at Ezekiel and how Ezekiel functioned. It may be something, a particular aspect, that as you meditate on the word Ezekiel, then a biblical picture or an event or an occurrence may come to you, particularly as you interestingly saw a city in the distance, and Ezekiel's ministry was very much around cities. And so he was taken by a lock of his hair and taken up to Jerusalem to see what was going on around the city, you know, so that he was aware of that which was going on in the spiritual atmosphere and going on practically in the city, because he was taken to see it. He measured out different things from the temple of God and had experiences of the river of life flowing out from under the temple. You know, he had experiences where he saw the seraphim and the cherubim, the different angels and different things. You know, so as you begin to meditate on it in your own heart, then you will begin to find the answers that God wants you to receive from those encounters and the significance of it and how God wants you to view it. And he may well be showing you something that his desire is for you to administer into. But sometimes these things are like classrooms, and they're there to tutor us into something. And I think, you know, if you see Hebrew symbols, it's usually because God wants you to go deeper into it, to pursue it. That's often it. Otherwise, he would just tell you. You know, personally, you know, I don't tend to get a lot of symbols as in letters and things like that. But often I do have encounters. You know, last week I had an encounter where I was given a seal to wear. And when I went back to meditate on that, then I was given some words to go and to meditate around. And, you know, and now it's my responsibility now to go and pursue that and find out, well, what is it that he was trying to show me? And sometimes, you know, I get very specific answers to questions that I talk to him about. So he will just tell me and I just journal those things that he says. But sometimes he really does want me to pursue. And so in the journey of pursuit, I discover things and find things that help me further on, you know, because God is wanting us to engage in relationship, you know, and that's the key. So it's a two-way interaction and a flowing of things. And a lot of people say, well, why is God so cryptic? Why can't it be more clear? And it does become more clear the more we pursue the things that he shows us. And those things do unveil into a greater clarity. You know, so, you know, I wouldn't be too concerned, but to pursue it, you know, and to think, okay, there were steps that were coming down that you saw, which is often an indication that you are to bring things from those things down into a different realm. You know, there were steps that were going up to it, you know, and it's just looking at the symbols and saying, well, what were they trying to tell me? You know, but I personally have found the most beneficial thing is to just take those things into the garden of my heart and spend time with them there. Because I found that they do then change me and direct me. And, you know, this thing of the seal, you know, I know my desire is drawing me towards an understanding of how to administer that Chancellor's seal. You know, because I had an encounter with 12 Chancellors, or, you know, and I need to go and follow that up, you know, Each encounter draws me to a greater level of prioritizing things, you know, so that I begin to prioritize those things, because I've got so many things journaled and written, and, you know, but it's, I need to know, well, what are the priority ones for now, and therefore my desires draw me towards it, and I find myself thinking about those things and thinking about, for me at the moment, it's about seals and how seals function, and, you know, how a privy seal and how a chancellor functions. You know, because those are the encounters that I've had recently that have unveiled those things for me.
I've got a quick comment. You mentioned that when we talked about the diamond, that some of these things are symbolic. Now, the places that we visited, do you think these are real places? You know, one place we came up through water and we were in this place and it seemed so real. And as I said, we went to different distinct places. Are they places we're going to, or are they symbolic places to teach us as well as the mode of transportations that we saw?
Well, I think probably both. You know, there are many places that we get to encounter, and the significance of those things will be determined by how we are drawn to certain things. You know, I know a lot of people have talked about, you know, when they've been into the realms of heaven, they've seen lots of houses and things like that. Personally, I've never seen a lot of that, But I have seen lots of waterfalls and pools and rivers and things of that nature. And those things tend to get my attention, and God speaks to me through those things because that's how I connect with them. Now, I've been to rooms and, I've been to, there's one room that I've been to which is behind the waterfall that was really significant. I engaged with Enoch and, I engaged with a quest, and there's like another lady I was talking to last week described it as the dialogue room. That's how it was described to her. And I found I was identifying with what she was saying, although I didn't know it as the dialogue room. It was just a place that I went when I was given a significant mission, if you like, quest or mission to do something. That's where I seemed to get it. And the first time I engaged, I wasn't really aware that it was Enoch, but I now know it was. It seemed to have missions and things to send me on and to do that I got in that room. But I found it behind the waterfall. And I know a few other people have also, I know, found it behind that place. For others, it may well seem to be somewhere else. But it's the engagement that we have there that's the important thing. Heaven is very multiversed. So there are many, many ways in which God can manifest that realm to us so that we can engage in it effectively for us. And so everything is real, in a sense, because it's a manifestation of the thoughts of God into reality, which is what that's how heaven got produced. God thought it, spoke it, and it became. And he still has the ability to make it that which we need to engage it with. So it's all real. It's real for us to engage in because he wants us to experience it in that way, which will help us in understanding what it is he's trying to show us. For me, what you drew from it is the key. You felt you needed to engage in the Word, and we're going to draw deeper into the Word to engage around it. You saw a book, you had that book subsequently, you saw Ezekiel, Ezekiel is a very interesting character who had lots of encounters of a wildly spiritual nature. And he found them very difficult to describe himself, so he used the best terminology he could with wheels within wheels and, eyes and wings full of eyes and all sorts of wheels with eyes, all sorts of quite strange pictures that people have tried to paint and illustrate, and, who knows exactly what he saw. But the purpose of it was to communicate something to us, that these are realities and realms that we can engage in. There are classrooms and there are places that you can go and train, and you can be taught there things. And I've got a friend who has engaged in lots of classrooms, and Jesus said to him, "I want you to enroll in this classroom." I've never personally had that experience myself. So I think they are different places that are for us, and other people will engage in maybe different ways and maybe the same ways, but they're all real, because what is reality? Reality is the consciousness of God expressed. And we get to shape our own reality by expressing that through our thinking, speaking, acting, to frame our own worlds and frame that which is around us. So it's God is showing you things that you then need to then use to shape the ministry that he's calling you to, and to shape how you do certain things. So, you know, you then can take people via diamonds and, you know, some people go by chariots, you know. I've been in a few chariots now and again. Some people go on thrones that are just move and fly. There's so many different ways that that we can experience things. You know, I can't take someone into something I've not experienced myself, and I wouldn't try to. So that's, therefore, I just open the door through what my experience has been, then hopefully people will gain their own understanding of it and see it in the way which relates mostly to them, which is why I don't tend to go into great detail in describing places, because I want to open a door to that place for the person to engage there in the way it will be most relevant for them to engage, and how God wants to communicate best in that place, because it's a dimensional place that can be very different for different people. Because God knows exactly what you need at any one particular time to be able to experience and engage it. You know, but if there's ever a sort of, well, what does this mean? Then just go back to God and ask him, you know, do I need to know the full details of this? Were you trying to use this as an analogy, which I need to understand all the different parts of it, because that will give me insight? Or were you just showing me something in general to point me in the right direction to change where I'm going to look at the moment? And some of that is you won't know until you really draw near to God and get his heart on it. You know, because sometimes if I went into every detail of everything I saw and tried to find an analogy, I would be years trying to find everything out about it, when actually God was just trying to show me one simple thing through the whole experience. And I think you can find that in parables. You know, some parables just present a central principle or truth. And some parables are more allegorical, in which the actual parts of the parable and the story have meaning. You know, like the parable of the sower. You know, in a sense, you know, the different soils and the soils of the heart, and they have meaning, and those meanings are important. Whereas, you know, another parable can just have a central theme that doesn't necessarily have an allegorical pattern for each part of the story. You know, so, yeah. Okay, anything else?
I could ask a quick question if nobody else has anything. Okay, you mentioned the dialogue room, and in fact, I'm glad you brought it up, because I have it written on the top of my page here that if I had a chance, I would want to ask you, because I did see that that podcast, and it kind of caught my attention, because I was spontaneously taken someplace, sort of in my sleep-wake state, just at the beginning of my experiences with these things, and I went to a room that looked like a library, and there were many books in there, but the thing that was that stood out about this place, there was constant narration going on. It was just a constant sort of monotone narration going on. Now, I didn't hear any words, but you know, it's like someone was playing a recording and there was constant talking. I couldn't. So when you said dialogue room, from what you described, it seemed different. But this room was like a library with wood and, you know, just what you would envision a very lush library to be. But the thing that stood out, and I was aware of other people in there, but I wasn't very clear and I didn't understand too well these things at that time. So can you make a comment on that?
Yeah. Well, if you think that everything that's going on with every single person in the world and every choice and decision they make has an effect on what happens, and if you think of the realm of heaven as being before everything that happens, because the speed of light is faster, and therefore everything can be now, then there is a sense where God is administrating and narrating the whole of what is going on from a perspective of what he knows and from what we make decisions about in relation to everything. So, you know, now God is never taken by surprise with anything we do, because he lives, in one sense, outside of time, but the realms of heaven are based in time. They are created, but they're not based on the same time frame. So our destiny and people prophesying out of our destiny comes from before it's happened. Every prophecy comes from before it's happened. But if you think God works all things together for good, then every decision we make, there is a constant... It's difficult to describe in terms of time, but every decision we make has an effect and needs to be rewired or re-navigated or re-narrated into that which fits into the purposes of God. And it's a really hard sort of concept to understand how God can be both transcendent and eternal and yet immanent and present. But the realms of heaven, as in Kingdom of God, Kingdom of Heaven, Heaven, all that, those realms are created and operate within the concept of interacting with us. And so there is, I believe, a narration which takes place, if you like, which takes into perspective everything that goes on in the whole world and every decision that's made. And if you think there's 7 billion people or whatever, all making decisions every microsecond, if you like, and their decisions will have an effect. I mean, one of it's like, you know, the thing of chaos theory. You know, does a butterfly's wings flapped in a jungle in the Amazon have an effect on what goes on in Toronto? Well, chaos theory says it does, because everything is connected. And so everything that we do and everything that is done has to be in some way managed, if you like, so that God's ultimate will and purpose are not thwarted or changed, but free will is a factor that God has given us. And so there are a lot of angels who work really hard to overcome the errors and the mistakes we make, because sometimes we don't get things right. Now, do we want our wrong actions or wrong things we say or wrong to affect eternity? I don't think so. So there's a lot of things that go on. It's very difficult to describe, but I think you may have just seen and heard in that place the fact that there is constant narration which is creating order out of chaos, put it that way. Because there's a lot of chaos. But God can work all things together for good. And so even when we make a wrong decision, he can bring out of that decision something that we can learn from, something which can be good and positive that can come out of even a mistake. But we don't get to make those decisions until we've made them, if you like. And so I think there's a sense where a lot of our decisions get reworked into bringing around our destiny, even though when we make bad ones, they can be reworked to help us re-engage, if that makes sense. I know that's a bit cryptic, but it's quite hard to describe how it works. but there are lots of angels who are involved in those things. You know.
Thank you, Mike. That really puts that in perspective for me, because I pondered that for quite a while.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope. Quite a bit to think about, the things that you said, and to listen to again. I don't know if the others has any questions or anything.
Okay. Have any of you engaged in the Judgment Seat and Firestones places? Okay. Have you seen the podcasts on it? I did a few sessions around it.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Where do you feel you are on some of those things?
Incidentally, just last night I was talking with Angela when we were coming back home about that, and I was saying, trying to figure it out, which probably I shouldn't try to figure out, but that's my mind works. I try to figure things out. I had an encounter a while ago where I saw Jesus, and he was, well, I didn't see him, like his face, but I knew it was him, but he looked like a fire, like a formation of fire. And then as I moved towards this fire, it seemed like a door, and I felt the invitation to go through that door. So I stood in that doorway, and as I stood in the doorway, I saw or sensed these stuff burning off and falling off of me. And then I sensed a door. It was the door, but something slamming behind me seemed extremely real, which I felt. So it was so like I heard the sound closing, and I looked back, and I heard, "You can't go back," right, because of the way that I was walking. So as I stood there and as I continued to proceed, I saw stairs going downwards. And the stairs seems like liquid. They were solid, but it seems to have sort of movement, golden, fiery, really like a high shine on them. That's the best way I can describe it. And I felt the invitation to go down these stairs. So what I was trying to figure out is that when I listened to that hangout that you had about the firestones, I didn't see any writings or anything on them, actually. So as I walked, I didn't go further down, just about two or three, on the right I saw these doors. So I didn't actually go back there to really engage in that. So I didn't understand if, were these firestones, were these stairs, were they supposed to have some writing on them? I have no idea. So, yeah.
I know, I didn't, the firestones didn't have any writing on them for me. When I stepped on them, I just became joined to them and knew what they were. So there was no writing as such for me. I just knew what they were, and you know, when I've gone back there, then I've gone in deeper into another stage of what they are. Originally, they were very much emotional interaction with the revelation of the character of God, and the three different levels of that within the fruit of the Spirit and things, but. You know, I don't think we've got time to really go there, but I would put it forward to you, because it's a place where engaging with the judgment seat deals with our scroll to release, to highlight the gold, silver, and precious stones, and to deal with the wood, hay, and stubble to release our scroll to contain and be reshaped, if you like, into our, from our destiny, and to deal with anything the enemy would have to be able to hinder us. So it is a key place of engaging the fire of God and the lion of the presence and the eyes of his fire and consuming fire, because it then opens the door into a different level. It certainly did for me anyway, and the fire stones are really places of trade and revelation that we need to understand and know if we're going to be transformed into the image of Jesus. And there are steps really that enable us to ascend. And, you know, I've only personally ascended those steps rather than descended them, but I'm not saying you can't descend from them. But it did enable me to engage the throne of God and my throne in that realm in sonship at a totally different dimensional understanding level with it. So maybe next time it would be good to, you know, actually go and encounter those things, because I think we do tend to do a lot of questions, which I'm no problem with the questions, but a lot of these things are best experienced, and because you need to receive the revelation into your own spirit of what they are and what it will do for you, so that you can feel the freedom of the expanse of heaven and the capacity that you have expanded, because it will expand your capacity to receive more, because your scroll will be purified and refined and all the wood, hay, and stubble got rid of, so you have a greater capacity to contain more and to receive more from the experiences and the encounters that you get, so that those things can direct you and lead you into future things. You know, I've found since going back there a number of times by taking other people there, it has had an effect on me, and I've had some encounters there which have brought me into a fresh understanding of some things. You know, I think it might be a good place to go next time.
That'll be good, Mike. I'm remembering that we did go there once with you, but I guess the more times, the better.
So where did we go? Yeah.
We went to the through the Firestones.
We didn't. No.
We went into like a furnace, but not through Firestones.
Okay, but there was a time when we went through fire and we went looked through the eyes of the lion and okay.
Probably the judgment seat, but the fire stones are judgment seat. There's a different dimension to the fire stones, and again when you're thinking about looking into the purposes and will of God as an ark, going back to what we started with. And taking sort of Lucifer, the light bearer's place, then he walked on the firestones on the mountain of God in Ezekiel 28. And the revelation he received, he traded wrongly to draw a third of the angels to himself. So it is a really, really key place. And I think the revelation that we can receive there can lead us into something quite different. So it may be a place that it would be good to encounter. So okay.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you, Mike.
Okay, you're welcome.
Okay.